people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go. We have lost their services. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots along with the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have we done? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Say that.
Do not be afraid.
Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved in front of them and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side. So neither went near the other all night long. I love that verse, but I'm not going to get to it this morning. Verse 21, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And all that night, the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and their left. And the Egyptians pursued them. All Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed all the wheels of their chariots so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back into its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that survived the Israelites in the sea. None of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right, a wall of water on their left. That day, say that day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. May the Lord bless the reading of his word to heaven. So we come to this infamous passage in Exodus 14. The crossing of the Red Sea on dry ground. This story is the stuff of Hollywood movies. It is one of the most discussed and preached about passages in the entire Old Testament. The account is still a significant part of the teaching of the Jewish religion. The lessons here are huge, and we see God's love for his people exhibited. We see his rescue plan. One of the things we've talked about here in this place over the last year and a half has been that God takes a difficult or even impossible situation, he turns it around, he shows his love, he shows his mercy, and eventually his power and glory. You see, Israel's between a rock and a hard place. When Pharaoh traps them at the Red Sea, but as I said earlier in the service, God can make a way out of no way. God can make a way out of no way. No sooner have the people of Israel escaped from their slavery in Egypt than they come to a screeching halt on the edge of the Red Sea. We read the passage in Exodus 14, and I'll not read over it again. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. They saw the army of Egypt on the hillside. Children of Israel were indeed between a proverbial rock and a hard place. Anybody ever been there? In front of them stretched an impassable sea. Behind them, an overwhelming foe. Chuck Swindoll says that Israel here ended up in a cul-de-sac, a dead end street. Any of y'all live on one like we do? 5778 Valley Forge Drive in Fairfield is on a cul-de-sac. Stop for a moment and think about their predicament. Try to put yourself for a moment in Israel's place. They have been freed from bondage through a marvelous intervention by the hand of God. Remember, as we talked about the last several weeks, during the night of the Passover, they were spared from the angel of death because they had applied the blood. Say somebody, applied the blood. They had applied the blood to the sacrificial lamb to their households. Now they were going out into the wilderness to meet with the Lord and to worship at Mount Sinai, after which they will move on to the promised land and the fulfillment of what God had promised. What could be better? Could they possibly be walking any more closely with God? To be more clearly living at the center of his will? But almost before their journey of faith gets started, they run into a roadblock, a dead end. It makes this look like the Exodus is going to be a shorter flight than the one taken by the Wright brothers. Their position had to be terrifying and deeply troubling. I mean, how do you make sense of a God who apparently goes to all this trouble to rescue you, only to abandon you to the enemy just a few miles down the road? A scorching desert to the south. A strong enemy fortress to the north. Egypt to the west. And there to the east, staring at the sea. What do we do now? Anybody ever said, what do I do now? The truth is, if you walk with God by faith, it doesn't mean that your way will automatically be easy. I said, I believe it's a nice slide, brother. I said, if you walk with God by faith, it doesn't mean that your way will automatically be easy. Say, I understand that. What now, we thought. Obedience is no guarantee that you'll never have to follow a rough road. Obedience is not the disappearance of obstacles. It doesn't come along without taking sometimes some puzzling detours and come to apparent dead ends. As believers, we sometimes find ourselves perplexed and at a loss when we try to understand that God's ways are not our ways. God says to Moses, do not be afraid. We've said that around here, haven't we? I believe I've shouted that pretty loud. The Red Sea isn't just a place where Israel will learn some hard lessons about how to walk by faith. It certainly is. But it's also where the Lord will learn, or where the people will learn even more about the Lord's power and His determination to save. The Lord is powerful and He is determined to save. When the people looked up and saw the pursuing host of the Egyptians, they reacted with panic and with terror. And then they did what they would habitually do from Egypt all the way to Canaan. They began to grumble. If you've read the story moving forward, you know that the children of Israel had a little bit of grumbling in them. They criticized Moses, and by implication, they criticized God Himself. Even in the passage that we read before we even really get started in this adventure, look what they said. Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? I see a little sarcasm here. What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Would have been better. Say it would have been better.
Amen.
Would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. I want you to think about that logic. You ever thought it would have been better if I just had stayed home? Would have been better if I had just stayed in the old job. Would have been better if I hadn't moved to this part of the country. The Israelites grumbled against Moses. And all Moses did, we've read about it, haven't we? All Moses did was be obedient to what God had called him to do. Now Moses questioned a little bit. He maybe even had a touch of grumbling. But Moses was obedient to the calling that was on his life, and therefore Israel finds himself in this spot. One of the things that amazes us as we read the Old Testament, and for that matter, as we think about the history of the church, which is just really a continuation of the same story, is the patience of our God. Why does He go on putting up with us? What does He see in people? People who are so quick to doubt that they would complain about their own salvation because the process wasn't going as smoothly as they had expected. Can the Lord stand it when people He is rescuing accuse Him of saving them from Egypt just so He can kill them in the wilderness? I mean, that's what the Israelites were saying here. You brought us out of Egypt, but at least we had a roof over our head. At least we had a little something to eat. insults the character of God. And it really doesn't make any sense if you think about where you have come from. Why did God keep on loving Israel? And he did, just as he keeps on loving you and me. There's a beautiful old Bible King James word for the patience of God. It says the old version, our God is long-suffering. He is long-suffering. Later in the book of Exodus, God reveals this part of his inner nature to Moses. In Exodus 34 and verse 6, it says, and the Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, and abundant in goodness and truth. God passed before Moses in his presence and said, here's who I am at yet another level. Do I lie? Merciful. Gracious. That old Bible word, long-suffering. Abundant in goodness and truth. Friends, that's your God. That is your God. So when the panicking people lash out against him, God responds in patience and grace. Moses answers for God and tells the people, don't be afraid. I think of a little one crawling up on the bed when the thunder's rolling. Mom and Dad, fast asleep. The lightning and thunder has woken the little toddler. The little toddler puts his hands up on Dad. Mom and Daddy, I'm afraid. I remember saying to little Lizzie, to little Anthony and Jeffrey, don't be afraid. We're saved. Abba Father here, he said. Abba Father here says, I know what you can see with your eyes. I know how you are feeling right now. But don't be afraid. I know what the situation looks like. But don't be afraid. Then he says, stand firm. Friends, there's time where you just need to stand firm. There are times in your life where you just need to say, Lord, I believe you're with me. The situation is all against me, but I'm going to stand. I'm going to stand firm and I'm not going to be afraid, because look at this next phrase. The Lord will fight for you. Who'd you want on your team, friend? I watched the Bengals yesterday. Starters didn't play. I think the second and third stringers kind of wish the starters could step in and join them. Because the Bengals lost this preseason 27-3. That's true. Have you ever been in a place where you said, the reinforcement's got to come from somewhere? Moses looks at the people and he said, God is going to fight for us. Stand still. What's the opposite of stand still here? Run for your life. Head for the hills. Or. Go back to Egypt. Go back to what it was. Go back to slavery. Go back to a complete lack of freedom. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to what? What's it say? It's a great verse in the Psalms. It says, be still and know that I am God. In our stillness, we come to understand who He is. I can talk a lot. I might do a sermon just on what He said. In your stillness, all the stuff swirling around, and there you are, it's you and God. It's you and God, and this verse says, He will fight for you. I like Him in my corner. Moses promised to the frightened people of Israel that God would fight for them was immediately fulfilled here. Trapped against the salt marshes and lagoons of the Red Sea, as it's called in Hebrew, Israel's position was hopeless. Say hopeless.
Hopeless.
But then the Lord intervened.
Yeah.
He stepped into the situation at just the right time. Inserting a fiery cloud between them and their enemies, God sent a strong wind to blow in from the desert. Push back the waters, dry a path for the people. When the Egyptians tried to follow, their heavier chariots bogged down on the soft ground, and as God caused the waters to revert to their normal course, Pharaoh's army was drowned in the swirling currents. Moses said, our God will fight for us. When God fights, He wins. People of Israel had been witnesses to God's power all along. Do you remember the 10 plagues? Had Israel seen God's power? Somebody say yes.
Yes.
Somehow this was different. The thing about the 10 plagues is that they were all more or less occurrences that could have happened in nature. They had water, bugs, frogs, hailstorms, locusts, an eclipse of the sun, perhaps even a plague that devastated part of the population. Those were all things that could have happened in nature. Perhaps that's why Pharaoh kept changing his mind. You remember Pharaoh changing his mind? Saw a plague, saw one of the things happen, says, okay, I'll let you go. Nah, I'm gonna change my mind. Happened 9 times. He could convince himself that these natural disasters were merely coincidences. They weren't. And maybe even the people of Israel did not fully realize what God was doing for them during that time. The infinite, almighty God was focusing His omnipotence on one precise spot of the earth's surface for the purpose of rescuing His people. The point wasn't so much that God could do amazing things. After all, anyone who believes in God knows that He can do anything He wants to. And He will most certainly do what He says He's going to do. Somebody said that.
Yeah.
The point was that God chooses to use His power to deliver His helpless people. He will do whatever it takes to save him. I said a second ago there was one spot on the earth. God concentrated His mercy and His love and His greatness to one spot on the earth, and He parted the Red Sea for Him. One day, God pointed His mercy to a cross on a hill. He pointed His love to one spot, to a cross on a hill. He pointed life to a cross on a hill where there was death. And He put in place mercy and grace for we and me. Let's go home. The Lord will fight for you.
Yeah.
He still knows that I am God. Here's the punchline of this story, verse 31. When the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in Him. Fear and trust. Two sides of our faith. Fear and trust. The lesson taught to God's people at the Red Sea was all about who God is and what He can do. About who God is and what He can do. He is the rescuer. His name is salvation. Nothing can stop Him in His determination to deliver His people. As I mentioned earlier, the African-American preacher, Fleming Rutledge, borrows a phrase. It's about the God who makes a way out of no way. Here's the theme this morning. I'll take it. He makes a way out of no way. God's mighty acts here show His true character. God's mighty acts show His true character. And what the story of the Exodus reveals is that God is the real deal. He's not tame. He's no one's pet. God is a warrior who can rescue His people, who overthrows and destroys their enemies. The real God is more than just a little scary, even to those who know Him. Especially to those who know Him. Such a God should be feared and respected, sure. But can you trust Him? This awesome, great God of creation, the great and powerful God that we've seen His amazing works, but can we trust Him? Trust Him. We go back a couple of verses. Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see. Say, you will see. Moses saying, you can trust because you will see. You can trust because you will see. You will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you will see today, you will never see again. You can trust Him. The Lord will fight for you. Be still and know. So in the midst of their lack of trust, we already see them grumbling. Moses tells them to trust. Trust in no way. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus. But to trust Him, no way. He says, be still. What a lesson to be learned here. Commentary according to Pastor Scott. Right? Don't take the Lord's battles in your own hands. Let it work. Allow your loving God the opportunity to walk you through this situation. Allow your loving God to walk with you through this circumstance. Allow your loving God the opportunity to love you. Let Him fight for you. Don't take the Lord's battles into your own hands. Say, we're learning. There's one more important point that I want to stress in this story before I close.
You never want to hear a preacher say, I'm closing, because that's another 45 minutes.
It is God's pattern to take his people through.
See it on the screen? If you don't hear anything I say this morning, it is God's pattern, it is God's plan to take his people through.
Verse 22. And we read in our text, the Israelites went through, say through. They went through the sea on dry ground. There was a wall of water on the right, wall of water on the left. A few sharks swimming here, a few manta rays swimming here, a couple of bass up by the shore. Wall of water on the right, a wall of water on the left. Dry ground. It takes them through. In the very hardest trials of life, God takes you through. In the very most disappointing circumstances, God takes you through. On the very saddest of days, God takes you through. Man. When confusion and hopelessness try to get a grip on your life, God takes you through.
One basically is not sponsored.
Just as
stop to
video we saw of children walking on dry ground. Did they walk around the Red Sea?
Nope.
Were they flown over top of the Red Sea?
Nope.
God took them through. It's his pattern. But child of God, he doesn't give you a little pat on the backside of encouragement and just send you on. He goes with you. He doesn't go, okay.
He just goes, he'll be okay. He'll be all right. Come on. Keep on. He doesn't do that. He comes in the middle center. He takes you through. You've lost something. Sometimes, he carries you through. He takes you through. I hope you get this.
Yes.
Yeah.
God is present. He is faithful. He goes with you. We will learn as we continue to study that the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night goes with Israel throughout their journeys. God is with them. God is present. God is faithful. But friend, it is so important that we keep our eye on the cloud. We keep our eye on the pillar of fire. We keep our eye on our God. He's with you. He's walking you through. What's your choice? Your choice is to focus on that wall of water on the right. Thinking that circumstances and situations and all that are just going to come pouring down all over you. Or you can focus on that wall of water to the left. Thinking that illness and discouragement and whatever is going to come down your path of what you want. You can do that. You can look to the right or you can look to the left. But God says, I am a pillar of fire and I am a pillar of cloud. And if you keep your eye on me, you will walk forward together. And we will have victory.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yes.
I want you to understand this. God takes his people through.
Yeah.
It was his pattern in Exodus 14. It's his pattern in 2024. If you focus on the trouble, if you concentrate on the circumstance, If you dwell on the source of trouble, the sea will swallow you up in hopelessness. I said, if you focus on trouble, if you concentrate on circumstances, the sea will swallow you up into hopelessness. Know anybody that's hopeless? But if you keep your eye on Christ, if you focus on the presence of the source of your strength, the Bible calls it your very present help in time of need, He will bring you through. And not sloshing around through the mud, but treading confidently on dry ground, reminds me of building my house on the rock. Onward to victory. Onward to strength. Walking with you onward to peace. And onward to what God has called you to. I want you to understand this. I close with some words from Chuck Swindoll. He's talking here about some of his own experiences. When I panic, I run. When I run, I lose. When I lose, God wins. When I win, God fights. When God fights, He wins. When God wins, I have won. Father, thank you for your word this morning. I pray that you would encourage someone this year that God is going to take you through this.